What is he saying? As a Christian, dedicate yourself to him. Put your life on the altar. The illustration, if you go back through the Greek, says it's like bringing the living sacrifice, the ram, the lamb, or whatever, and leaving it at the altar. The Jew would not bring the sacrifice up there and say, oh, I changed my mind. I think I'll take it back home. No, when he left it there, the one Greek word, I'm not sure what it is anymore, meant to leave it there at the disposal of the Lord. Present your bodies to him. If you do that, he says that's a sane, rational choice. Why? Because if it belongs to the Lord, it can no longer be used by Satan. For you see, Satan wants to seep in, and he'll use any opening in the body he can. The eye for lust, the ear for hearing what we want to hear, and so forth. But when he starts coming, you say, reserve, you know, no room here. It's full. You can't take over anymore. And that's hard, because we want all those other things. And so what you're saying is, if we can make that choice in advance, we've conquered a lot of battles. They're behind us. Believe me, friends, it's taken me years to reach that. I hope you reach it quicker. And I can't say that I've done it totally, but I've learned it's the only way to come to peace and terms with your Lord, and to begin to make some sense out of your life where it ought to be. Hopefully you'll do it a little quicker. I'm a slow learner. I know that. It takes me a lot of time. Okay, any other that we want to look at? Everybody's sleepy. Everybody's tired. Everybody's fatigued. Was there any other time waster? Sir?
Yeah, the other one was that we taxed too much. In other words, we didn't get the 80%
Exactly. Again, the reprioritizing. We've got to restructure that 80-20. We find out after a while that our priorities are simply not in order. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. I'll think about it some other time. I have another cartoon, and I should have brought about half a dozen of these. This guy is laying on the couch, and his wife is coming by, and he says, let's talk about procrastination later. That's about the way that we tend to be. And obviously, again, procrastination is simply another way of interrupting ourselves, right? We're so fearful of attacking some things, but the more quickly we do them. What was it that Mark Twain said? If you have two frogs to swallow, don't swallow the little one first. Think about it. He's saying, you got two tasks to do, and they're untasteful. Conquer the hardest one first and get it over with. Then the next one will come a little easier. I like that. Don't swallow the little frog first. You'll gag on the big one, for sure. Okay. Dealing with time wasters. Really, if you look at this page 48, it's doing no more than what you just went through. At the bottom of the page, start with a problem. Identify a problem. Follow the arrows up to the right. Find out the reasons for the problem. Try to work out some resolutions for each of the reasons. Use it. Use the new ideas. Then periodically go through that system again, using the kind of buzz sessions you are here. It's, again, it works the best with those that you are working the closest to. This month you might try whatever the time waster was. Look at it, examine it. Next month, dredge up another one. Say, let's take a look at it. I want to conclude by, this technique can be applied to any time waster you want. I want to close by looking at a section which, especially when I present to profit-making organizations, makes some sense, but it'll make some sense hopefully for you too. Personal and leisure time. I always feel that if an organization makes use of people, it ought to plow something back into them. In terms of our Senate, we're now calling that continuing study, and you'll hear more about it as you get into the parish. You know, going back to find some new concepts or to rehone some of the old concepts which you have. And Senate is really pushing that very, very much to keep pastors abreast of what's happening and alert them to not going to seed. One of the ways that I would suggest that you do this is to think in terms of living in time-tight compartments. I got this idea from Dale Carnegie's book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. A lot of people like to poke fun at Dale because it sounds like he has such simplistic ideas, but he has very practical ideas. He was a true plagiarist, and he went to the best possible sources, usually to plagiarize. When he says live in day-type compartments, he's saying what Jesus said, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Jesus was saying, you got enough troubles today, don't borrow from tomorrow. So what do? We drag a bag full of yesterday's problems with us, and we say, oh, goody, there's a bunch tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that, I'll grab them too, you know, and I might as well worry about them all. And Jesus says, no. Cordon off those other days and live in today. It's like walking into a ship and going through a door and battening down that watertight compartment and battening down the one ahead of you. It's setting your time off. You set it off for a purpose of dividing it. I like to divide it into these three times: payout time, growth time, and personal or leisure time. Payout time is, in terms of the profit-making organization, what they're paying you for. I mean, after all, your parish does not pay you simply because they like your good looks, you know? Say, oh, would you just hang around so we can peek at you now and then? No, they're going to expect some results out of you. And so, that's your payout time. I'd like you to separate that very careful play from your personal time. One of the things that I see so often with people is that they'll come to work, not at Christ Lutheran, but in many organizations, they will have left the house and said, I wish I wouldn't have screamed at my spouse, yelled at the kids, and kicked the dog. And so they suffer through the day saying, ah, if I wouldn't have done that. And so they give less than 100% on the job. And then they go home and say, I wish I'd have done a better job at work. And they mope about it there. So what we're saying is, if you can separate the two and give the best you can while you're on the job, then you can go home, slam the door of the church. Like I said, I can slam that door, walk 80 paces or so, and forget what's back there and concentrate on my family and my personal needs. In between is what I like to call growth time. And sometimes it bleeds in opposite directions. For example, growth time for you is your studies. And perhaps a workshop like this, we hope, has also contributed to your growth. Now, most organizations, as I say, as they take something out of a person, should replace it. Your parish will grow to the extent that you continue to grow. The more you know, the more techniques, the more abilities you are able to assemble, the more your parish will benefit. So it makes good sense if you can persuade them to give you opportunities to attend workshops. Hopefully you hit them all as good as this, but that's not always possible. And then, as you grow, you can plow it back into the parish itself. Sometimes growth time sneaks up on you when you least expect it. It does not always come when you read the Concordia Theological Monthly. Not always. I have found very often in most organizations it is the more technical journals that do not always contribute the most to your growth. I'm not poo-pooing them. I'm just simply saying, don't think that that's the only place you're going to find growth. You're going to find it when you read the newspapers, magazines, listen to TV. I think you've heard this before, haven't you? I've said, in essence, if you keep your mind constantly open, already having opened that door, knowing what your number one how-to is going to be, your number two and your number three, you're always going to be open to anything being fed into you, whether it's through your ear, your eye, or whatever. You listen to it and you grow. And so it'll sneak up on you. Sometimes you'll be listening to this TV program and you say, ah, I can use that in a sermon. Or, oh, why don't we consider doing that at Christ Lutheran? Always be as open as you can, understanding that all they can do for you at the seminary, I'm sorry, I did not intend to say that. All they can do for you at the seminary is to teach you to learn. When I was teaching both for UNO and UNL, both in Lincoln and Omaha, I would consistently say to the young people, I can only lead you through these texts, direct you to other readings, and help you to grow, but the furthest we can go at the university is to help you learn how to learn, because your lifetime will be that. You will be consistently reading, growing. You will preach a text for the fourth time and say, why didn't I see that the first time? And the answer is, you're going to draw on more and more resources. The Holy Spirit will help and guide you to see things you haven't seen earlier. Your mind has got to always be open and ready to learn, and you will grow as a result. We gave you, under lesson number two, or step number two, some ways to set out your priorities. It is my suggestion that you might take page 51, for example, and ask your spouse to fill it out, or your children. For the fact of the matter is, you don't always know what they want. And if there's anything that's self-defeating, is for a spouse to say, you ought to know what I want. Fact of the matter is, we are not mind readers. Secondly, what you want changes. Now, son number three, or number four, number two is always very interesting. He would say, I may be second born, but I'm number one. And so he had his priorities in order. But number four, if I came back from the church, opened the back door, I don't know how it was, but he always knew. When I opened the door, if he were downstairs, floating upstairs would come, Father, you know, like, that's better. No, Father. Father, will you fix my bike? Father, will you do this? Father, will you do that? Father, Father, Father. And he was always an upfront guy. You know, you always knew what he wanted. Most people aren't. And so if you want to know what your spouse wants from you, you ask. You ask. Because you cannot guess. And as I say, what they want, what your children want, changes. So be sure that you constantly probe and ask so that you can see what it is that they want from you. Well, I think that's about as far as I'm going to go today. If there are any general questions, one other thing I might mention. A booklet that I have is by Rudolf Fleisch. I'm not sure whether he has a C in there or not, but it's on organizational communications or business communications, something like that. The reason why I suggest that you read it is that I don't know how to say this without sounding strange, but in most cases, we have to teach our vicars to speak. I'm serious about this. Somehow, there's a tendency, except for Dave, of course, there's a tendency for us to tend to have language way up here. Now, as our current vicar put it to me, but we have to teach them how to understand these new words. I says, why? What are they going to benefit from it? You know, what is it that you're intending to do with all the new members we get in? You know, we take in approximately 150 a year. Think about it. That's better than one every 3 days. You know, you want to sit down with each one of them and give them a glossary. You know, what are you going to do? Maybe you had better use language which they can understand. It is entirely possible for us to take a shorthand word like justification or sanctification and put it into the English language. Believe it. Fleisch says there are 50 verbs, including words like swim, walk, etc. If you will memorize, you can use them to convey the most complex abstract idea you want. And it is my suggestion that you work on this. I always figure that if fifth and sixth graders can understand, most adults might be able to. It does not work in reverse, and you had better believe it. There's nothing that ticks me off more than hearing a sermon right up here. Sometimes I understand it, sometimes I don't. Maybe that's why it ticks me off. But more than that, I'm always looking at that person who does not yet know the gospel of Jesus Christ. When I was back at the seminary campus here, Dr. R.C. Kemmerer, we used to call him Little Dickie Camshaft, which was not nice, but he was our homiletics prof, And he left one basic concept with me. When you preach a sermon, you must present the gospel of Jesus Christ so clearly and concisely that if someone has walked in off the streets never having heard the gospel before, they will leave knowing it fully. And that requires very deep simplification. So I guess one of the things I'm begging of you is that you speak in the language of the people. Watch what Jesus did. A sower went out to sow his seed. It's my favorite illustration because of the sower on the top of our state capitol, which I see every morning when I go out walking. And it's an illustration which he used. They say to us, he talked to them in parables. Language which they could understand. We get abstract. We're told that the people of the Western world tend to talk in categories, where the people of the East speak in pictures. What is your wife like? You talk to an Easterner, he will say, her hair is like the sunshine coming over the eastern hills. Her teeth are like the sheep on the meadows. You know, we ask, what is your wife like? And I say, well, she's about 5'10". She's got two arms, two legs, you know, the usual equipment. You know, we're very romantic about it. Now, why do we get so abstract? Why don't we get it back into the word pictures? One other thing I would leave with you. When you preach, yell. Okay? When you lead an altar service, yell. Please, I mean that. Because there's the little old lady three quarters of the way back who says, what did he say? And she means it because she cannot hear you. My voice projects well and I yell on top of it. And I'm serious about that. There is nothing more that drives me up a wall than the deep, oh, Lord, we are gathered here today. Now, talk like a human being, you know? Just talk like you would naturally to others, but maybe you talk that way sometimes. Lord, we are gathered. No, I don't really think so. So I guess in terms of preaching, just talk normally. Use simple words, a lot of illustrations, just try to put it as simply as you can, I guess. Well, with that, I think I better shut up and ask if there's any final questions. We only have 5 minutes left. Anything else anybody else wants to say? If not, I thank you so much for having me here. I have enjoyed it. I really appreciate the opportunity to share some of these ideas with you. I realize that you won't be able to use them all, and some settings are going to be totally different than the one that I'm in. But I hope that I've shared with you somewhat effectively some of the basic concepts which have helped me through my ministry. Dave, anything else?
No, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. I was going to say, other than that, yell, always go big red.
Yeah, they are 18 in the behind. They are 18.
Have the best
that last game we thought we had it.